Good afternoon and welcome. Welcome indeed. Town number two of the Mark Mosey Show. And joining me right now, very fine gentleman with the Florida Today newspaper. Seems Tim Walters, my man. How you doing today?
I am doing not too shabby, Mark. How are you out there?
Well, I didn't get pulled over by police and get arrested for having 157 pounds of marijuana in my car. Have you done that this week?
Yeah, that's a bad day at the office, man. I got to tell you.
Also, with the intent to sell, right? That's the other thing.
Yeah, you know, well, I'd hope they're not planning on smoking 157 pounds of marijuana themselves. They'd develop a nasty cough if they did.
Oh man, you can't.
Well, you know, I do have to say this. So, you know, the serious part about this are these guys are trying to cross the border with 157 pounds of pot. The two people we are talking about is an ex-Cleveland Browns left tackle, Greg Robinson, who played college football at Auburn, and an ex-former Auburn teammate who also played for the Indianapolis Colts, a receiver named Jaquan Bray. So if convicted, they face 20 years in a federal prison. So that just sounds like a horrible thing. At 6'5" and 330 pounds, I imagine Greg Robinson will be able to defend himself pretty well in federal prison. But it's still not a place that that you probably want to find yourself.
Why are you going to Mexico? You can't find anyone to buy this marijuana from you in America. That's what I'm confused on. And who's the third guy? I'm hearing reports he's an Uber driver who didn't want to go. This, you put this in a text. This is a Cheech and Chong plot, isn't it, Tim?
Well, for those who remember Up in Smoke, and of course, I'm sure most people over about the age of 35 or 40 have seen this movie. You know, the plot is Cheech, he leaves home, you know, hooks up with Chong. They make their way down to Mexico. They're supposed to pick up a vehicle, accidentally pick up a van made of marijuana. At the end, they go to a concert. The van gets lit on fire. The cops and everyone else gets high, and the movie pretty much ends happily. So, you know, I wonder if they checked the makeup of the vehicle.
How dare you ruin the plot to Cheech and Chong from 30 years ago? How dare you?
I forgot to say spoiler alert, and it's 42 years ago, but who's counting?
Oh, man. I'll tell you, why are they going to Mexico? I don't get that. That's the part I don't get.
The first thing I put on social media, I saw a friend of mine post this morning, and I said, well, why not just go to Colorado or Seattle? I wonder if, number one, you probably can't go to even one of these marijuana shops in Colorado and buy 157 pounds, but I'm sure it's probably the markup in the United States, like everything else is incredible, so it's probably a fraction of the price in Michigan. But you would hope, even having made league minimum just for a few years in the NFL, these guys couldn't be doing that bad. So, you know, I guess I would rather take my chances of buying it a little bit more expensive in Colorado and bringing it to a state where maybe it's not legal, as opposed to trying to cross the border and fool the federales.
I wish I was there when they were in the driveway leaving the house in the SUV, where they were loading the marijuana in bags in the back of the truck. I wish I was there, because you know they were like, yeah, this is going to work. Yeah, this will be an easy score for us. My God, this is so great. It's like, it needs to be on one of those Fox TV shows, like World's Dumbest Criminals and Car Chases. Can we get them on there, please?
Yeah, I get nervous at the airport if I think my shampoo bottle is too big. These guys are trying to drive 157 pounds of pot across the border.
So you're one of those guys that brings the shampoo on, huh? Is that right?
Well, you got to bring your carry-on with you. I don't want to check luggage.
Oh, now it makes sense. I love when I go to the airport and there's people that just bring like a picnic basket of food and think they can get it on the plane. That's my favorite. Like every time. And the TSA people are like, are you for real? Like, are you really trying to bring all this food on? Like, are you serious? That's my favorite. Heavens every time. Oh my God. That is the
best. I wouldn't blame somebody for wanting to bring a Publix chicken on an airplane, but you know.
Oh, no, they're doing the worst of the worst, because you'll get people, Tim, where they got gigantic liquids of water as well, like all these mysterious bottles of something. Then they got your shampoo bottles. Then they got all this different food. They know what they're doing. All right. They want to mess with the TSA. That's what this is.
It's kind of like the dinosaur in Jurassic Park pushing against the fence to see what part isn't electricized. You're just testing until you escape.
Oh, yeah. You're poking the bear. That's what you're doing. That's exactly what it is. Oh, man. Do you like, because we talked about this last hour, the NFL wants to go to a 17-game regular season, eliminate a preseason game, and this would start this fall, add two teams to the playoffs. What do you like and what don't you like about this?
I don't like just having one team with a bye in each conference. I think that's kind of silly. I mean, if you're going to do this, you know, bring eight teams in each division, play four games, and have an even number of teams. Because, it's such a strange thing to do to only have, you know, to put seven teams in a playoff.
Yeah.
Now, part of the CBA, which I found interesting, was it said, and I'll read this directly, it says, the players on teams that earn a first-round bye will receive postseason pay for that weekend. So if you're the number one seed, not only do you not have to play, but you get paid for it. You know, that's a pretty good deal. So, you know, the problem comes in. Let's say you have two 13-3 teams that are tied for first and second, and then some arbitrary measure, you know, puts one team into the second spot. That kind of stinks because now you got to play a game, even though you got an even record. So, I would rather just see them. If you're going to expand it, just go to 8-8.
You want to go 8-8. Even more teams in the playoffs. That's what you want.
Yeah. Oh, I love playoff football. Is it me or is it, you know, the weekend where you have the four playoff games? You got two on Saturday, you got two on Sunday. Are those not some of the best weekends of the year when you're still working your way through the NFL playoffs? I love those.
Okay, so under this current format, the wild card weekend would have three games on Saturday and then three games on Sunday. So then each conference would have three teams advance. Then, what, like you're saying, the first round bye goes to the one seed. So three teams advance, two teams will play each other, the other team will take on the one seed. So really, you are just adding two more games, wild card weekend. Okay, all right. You know what? Now that I said it out loud, I actually kind of like it. Not like it, but... go on.
I love adding a team to each one, and I'm sure financially, if they look at the money made, you know, and this is one of the reasons that you get the 17th game instead. The preseason games are so not well attended,
yeah.
And especially by that fourth preseason game where they're playing absolutely nobody, those stadiums are empty. You know, look at the financials compared to a week 17 where you have teams vying for now an extra playoff spot where you can get two, you know, that those are going to be sold out games. You know, the TV ratings are going to be through the roof. So, you know, I'm sure that there's so much money to be made. I just hope that the players, you know, are getting the proper share, the proper cut, because these are the guys you're sending out there to basically, you know, every week in, week out, run into each other as fast as they can, and they're each the size of a Volkswagen. I mean, these guys are really beating themselves up. I hope that, you know, knowing that a ton of money is extra is going to be made, I hope a lot of it goes to them.
What are you talking about? We're selling marijuana south of the border. We're making plenty of money on the side. Come on. What are you talking about? I don't know. I don't know if I like 17-game schedule. Especially as a guy that roots for a team that's terrible, and I think you do as well, I think 16 games of playing terrible is enough for me. I don't need to add any more games. I'm sorry, Tim. That's how I feel.
Well, I agree with you. I like the 16-game format, and I would maybe just eliminate one of those preseason games anyhow. But again, it's all about money. The NFL, you know, they're basically printing it in the basement of their New York high-rise. And, you have to, you know, to pay Roger Goodell his ridiculous 40-something million-dollar-a-year salary and his private jet and his pension for life and his family's life. I mean, you got to make some extra money on the side.
They really said, I'm telling you, you were going over the numbers. It's like they add one game, the revenue sharing for the players, they would add like $5 billion for the players. $5 billion off one game. That's amazing. It's not 157 pounds of marijuana crazy, but it's like it makes sense. But here's my question. Do you think the players will approve this when it gets in front of them?
Oh, boy.
I know.
Now you're putting me inside negotiations, but I think ultimately they will because, money talks. And I think that ultimately they're going to come to the number, the right number. the right negotiating amount, and I think it'll happen, yes.
You say yes. I say they will come to an agreement, but there will be some changes to this. I don't think the NFL is, I mean, the NFLPA, I don't think they're going to be completely 100% on board with this. I just think there's going to be some type of changes. That's just my opinion, Tim.
Yeah, and they'll still be working on this over the course of the year. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if maybe the two playoff teams get added, but maybe that 17th game doesn't become a reality. You know, I can't speak to that, but you're right. I don't think the form that, you know, nothing ever gets, you know, passed in its first form. So this is probably like, you know, a bill going through Congress where it's going to be, you know, analyzed, torn apart, changed, and then they'll come with some sort of compromise, you know, in 6 months or something.
What's our update on baseball since we last talked Thursday? Is it just more players are yelling at the Astros and the commissioner? Is that what we've missed?
Well, you know, I think that there are even some of the quieter players in the league are now feeling emboldened to call out the Astros. So you see Mike Trout and Aaron Judge, guys that are, you know, generally very quiet. They put their heads down and do their work. But, you know, Judge, he basically got, you know, lost an MVP award to a guy who was half his size and clearly cheating. You know, the Dodgers, you know, I don't blame them for being bitter. They lost a World Series where one of their pitchers who was great at home got shelled at Houston because they knew it was coming. You know, I don't blame the players for being completely upset. You know, I understand that, again, with their collective bargaining agreement, there's not much Rob Manfred, commissioner, could have done to punish the players. You know, he offered them immunity, so they would talk freely, but even if he didn't offer them immunity, he would have really had very little recourse on what he could have done to the players under their collective bargaining agreement. So, you know, the only thing he could do was punish management, managers, you know, fine them. They couldn't really punish the players, which is just unfortunate because, you know, to me, these guys, the way they cheated, I think is worse than the way the steroid guys cheated, because a steroid guy was doing steroids and doing it to himself, and you still have to hit the baseball. You know, these guys knew it was coming. And if you know a curveball that's going to drop 10 inches at the back end is coming, you're going to be able to change your swing to hit that ball. Or if you know a fastball is coming, you're going to have to, you know, start your swing earlier. There's so much advantage that you get just by having that small tip-off. And, of course, people have been stealing signs since the dawn of time. Mm-hmm. It's that Houston had set up something like they were the NSA, with, you know, their electronical gizmos that were stealing everything. So, you know, I just think that this is, I don't blame the players on the other teams for finally speaking out and saying, you know, this is horrible. And, you know, if you saw what Little League did in Williamsport, they're not going to allow the team name of Astros to be used anymore for the next year, because it's in their bylaws that players will play fairly and not cheat. And they don't want to foster a team that clearly cheated. So, you know, there's a lot of ramifications from Little League all the way up through the big leagues.
Okay, how about this? How about this? Right before opening day, which is coming up here in a couple weeks, how about you and me go to like a batting cage, or we practice with a high school team? They tell us what pitch is coming, and we still try to hit it. How about that as a video? Let's do it.
Oh, that would be comical, because you and I would still be striking out and look like frightened little children. Because if somebody told me a fastball was coming and it's in the 90 to 95 range, no, I'm probably going to run away from that, because I've been up close to these guys pitching, and I really don't want any part of that. I'm certainly, my reaction time and my skill level is definitely not high enough.
Okay, wait a minute. So not only are you going to try not to hit it, you're going to run away from the plate. Is that what you just said?
I might. Have you been? I'm sure you have. You've been up close to a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. You've seen what that looks like from a few feet away, right?
Okay, this is a story where we were at Space Ghost Stadium when they still had the manatees, and I think John Torres was with us. We were in the press box because Jose Fernandez, who was with the Marlins, you know, he tragically passed away a couple years ago. And we met him. He's a super nice guy. He was doing a rehab start. He was destroying the manatees hitters. He's at the mound, 95-mile-an-hour changeup. The guy was a stud. That's how close I've been to it, where I really see how dominant they are against mere mortals. So, yeah, you know what? I'd run away as well. I think that's what the plan is. Okay? I would. Oh, my God. All right. What if it's... All right, we're at a high school stadium, the high school team. They're throwing 70 miles an hour. He's selling fastball. Hit it. Do you think you can do 70 miles an hour?
Nowadays, I don't know. I'd have to get in practice, but probably not. I mean, I'm in my mid-40s. Maybe if
yes,
I was in
you
my
could.
20s again.
No.
You know, and I'm in pretty good shape for a guy my age, but I just don't know about that.
All right, 10 pitches. They're in the 70s. They're all fastballs down the middle. I say you foul tip two of them. Would you take that?
Oh, yeah, I think I could ding a couple off, but I don't think I'd... If I was to get one in play, it would probably be a weak squibber or a pop-up to the catcher or something, but because even 70 miles an hour is pretty quick.
Sounds very manly to me. I like it. This is... I've learned a lot about you. We're here with Tim Walters.
That's why we cover sports.
Oh, I know. Yeah, and Cheech and Chong movies. That's what we do. All right. What do you got going on with the Florida Today newspaper, buddy?
You know, Brian McCallum's just working through high school season right now, and we're coming to kind of into that slow period for that. But, you know, we've got spring training heating up. You know, what'd you think of that Ryan Newman crash this weekend? Amazing to see him walk out of there, walk out of the hospital yesterday. So, you know, we're just kind of working through some of those things. And, you know, hey, even the Gator baseball team's looking pretty good. So, you know, we now own the Gainesville Sun. We've been getting more updates from the Florida Gators and the different sports they play. So, you know, a lot of good stuff going on digitally at floridatoday.com. And, you know, check out the newspaper.
Did you ever think when Ryan Newman crashed on Monday night with, like, an eighth of a lap to go, did you ever think he'd be walking home today? Because I didn't. There's no way. What about you?
I mean, I'll be honest with you. At the time when I saw the crash happen, I really thought that he was going to die. I mean, you saw the car burst into flames, fly through the air, get hit by another car. You know, it just makes you wonder why you know, regular vehicles we drive around with maybe don't have better roll cages, you know, better head and neck restraints. Because I mean, that guy. You know, he got bashed about as bad as a human could fly around in a flaming ball, and he walks out of the hospital 3 days later. So it's just a testament to the things NASCAR has done to improve safety. And, of course, they learned a lot from, you know, Dale Earnhardt's death now 20 years ago, 19 years ago. But, you know, it's just amazing. And, you know, Hillard Grossman here at Florida Today, who used to cover NASCAR regularly, he actually remembered when Newman was in a similar crash in 2003, and he went and found the front page of the paper of the car, you know, burning and flying through the air, and wrote a story about how, you know, 17 years later, Newman survived a second very similar-looking crash. So, you know, Ryan Newman's basically my age. I'm 43. He's 42. If I was him, I'd take my mega millions of dollars. You have two beautiful little daughters, and just get out of there because that's so dangerous, and you've now survived it twice. How many lives do you have left?
I can't believe. I think of like every action movie where the guy is in the hospital bed, where he's got the full body cast, where his arms and legs are broken. That's what I thought Ryan Newman would be like. That's what I'm not. There's no way I thought he seriously, and I will say this one more time, that guy would be walking out on his own will. And he probably would get back in the car. I know you're saying like, look, you should step away. He'll get back in the car. He will. It's in his blood. You know he's going to do it, but... I had people texting me thinking he was dead Monday night, like you were saying. That's how scary that was. But can you even name who won the race? Like, is that even a story today when you look at the Daytona 500?
It was Hamlin, right?
Yes. Yeah, see, you had to hesitate. I know.
It's kind of like when you ask somebody who won the year that Dale Earnhardt died. You know, you've got to really reach back. Now, I remember because I was covering it that night that Michael Waltrip won it, but I bet a lot of people don't remember that at all either.
If I may ask then, what was it like being there on the track when Earnhardt passed away?
Actually, I worked at the Village's newspaper that night. We had two people who were at the track, and I was designing the sports front that night. Oh. So I was getting our photos and our information and our updates. And, of course, back then we didn't have websites that updated regularly. So, you know, and information was kind of trickling in. And I remember fighting with our news editor got involved. And he was a big NASCAR guy who thought he knew more than everybody. Mm-hmm. And so he said, even though Earnhardt was dead, he thought that the bigger story was Waltrip winning and wanted to run the photo of Waltrip bigger on the front page of the paper. And I remember I was all of 23, 24 years old at the time, and I'm arguing with this guy, telling him that I thought that that was terrible news judgment. And ultimately, we ran a, you know, two pictures, each the same size, one of Waltrip's car, one of Waltrip and one of Earnhardt's car all smashed up. And, you know, the headline was, you know, Earnhardt dies, Waltrip wins. And I just, you know, it was a compromise that I'm still angry about to this day because, you know, Waltrip winning certainly wasn't the story, you know, Earnhardt dying was. And you know, to this day, that's kind of one of those news things that's really always stuck with me because I remember our two guys there who were covering it, you know, as they were sending us info and getting more info about it, you know, and it seemed more likely that he was dead and we were discussing it in the newsroom. I just couldn't believe this guy and his hubris that was just, you know, that saying that. So I remember that night, you know, I wasn't at the track, but I do remember working, you know, all night that night.
I don't understand. If he was a NASCAR guy, I know this is woulda, coulda, shoulda, but it's like, if you're a NASCAR guy, Earnhardt's the story. What? That's so crazy. You did the right thing, buddy. I'll tell you that right on the air. You did make the right decision standing up for yourself in that one.
Yeah, I felt like I was fighting, you know, I felt like a kid fighting with his dad because, like I said, I was, you know, 24 years old arguing with a guy in his, you know, 50s who had been a newspaper guy forever, and I just couldn't believe that his decision-making was such. So, but I appreciate that. Thank
you. Yeah, man. No, you do a great job. You really do. His name, I'm in shock by that story you just told. It's like crazy. I can't believe that happened. Yeah. But you did the right thing. We're here at Tim Walters, Florida today. My man, thanks for your help and have a great weekend. All right.
Hey, I appreciate it, Mark. Take care and we'll talk to you soon. Have fun.